This is the Scottish Club Rugby Podcast.
The Scottish Club Rugby Podcast.
With Stuart Cameron and Dale Clancy.
Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Scottish Club Rugby Podcast. And in the programme this week, Dale Clancy and I will be looking back at a very busy Sevens weekend in the Borders with both Hoik and Berwick tournaments taking place. There was semi-finals action last Saturday for six teams in the Scottish Cup and the Scottish League Cup. We'll have details of that and also preview the weekend with the emphasis on the Cup and League Cup finals at Murrayfield. But let's begin with the Scottish Cup semi-final between Edinburgh Rackies and Marr at Raeburn Place. It was the last game in a Marr jersey for Conor Bickerstaff, and sadly for him, it was a losing one as they went down 30-21. After the game, Hugh Brown had a chat.
Conor, it just wasn't to be, and sadly a defeat in your very last match of 239 for Marr.
Yeah, maybe not the way you'd want to write it, I suppose, finishing up. You'd always want to finish with a win, but I thought the boys who kind of came in today with quite a few missing stepped up, did well, were in the game, start second half, and that interception changed the game. So, you know, fair play to Ackies, they deserved the win overall, and yeah, bittersweet, but yeah, I suppose a nice sunny day to finish up on, so I'll take it.
When I spoke to you at the Melrose Sevens last week, it sounded like you were going to carry on playing next year. What changed your mind in the past week?
I didn't want to give too much away last week, I suppose, but it's been on the cards for maybe, I thought about it last season heading into this one. I've just, you know, injuries, you know, three knee reconstructions, and, you know, things that have kind of been tougher and tougher every year to keep fit and keep sharp. So we've got a wee boy due in August, and yeah, 32 next month, and work's busy, so there's a few things kind of weighing on the side of hanging up the boots, and there's a lot of good young kids coming through our college into the team, and I suppose it's a good opportunity for them now to get a crack. So
how did you see today's game then? It really was it was a good game for the supporters to watch, and a good game presumably to play in too.
Yeah, no, it was a good game to play in. I think, you know, Ackies like to play a nice brand of rugby, and, you know, they want to move it about and play rugby that you said the neutrals like to watch, and we tried our best. You know, I think we ran out a wee bit of puff after maybe 50-60 minutes, and a few of our key players in the pack were hurting a wee bit and dropping off. So you know, some of the young boys coming in off the bench and playing for the first time, first time in this kind of game anyway, a semi-final of Cup's quite a big match, so they did well. But, you know, fair play to Ackies, I felt they deserved to win overall, so can't complain.
In your time with Marr, 14 years, you must have had some highs and lows. What are some of them? Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, highs. There's been a lot of highs, I say, more than lows. You know, when I left school in 2010, we were National 3, the old Division 6, and we came up through the divisions. You know, I think we've won six league titles, including, you know, myself being a captain for the Premiership, which was, you know, one that I'll definitely remember, being involved in Scotland Club 15 and other representative stuff that's been, you know, I'll always be grateful getting them opportunities, and I'll definitely remember them. But for playing for my local club and coming up through the ranks, and, you know, everyone now knows who Marr are in Scotland, you know, probably 8-9 years ago they wouldn't have. So yeah, proud to be part of that journey, and I just hope the boys can continue that on, and I can watch in the sidelines with a beer in my hand and enjoy watching them for years to come.
Brother Scott got a try at the end of the game as well.
Yeah, he did, yeah, he's always scoring tries. You know, I think I've actually just pipped him this year. I've scored 11, he's scored 10 overall, so I think he might just pip the top try scorer for the first time in a good few years, so I'll take that to finish off. But no, he's a try scoring machine. His record's a lot better than mine. I think he's in the 200s for tries, so yeah, he's a quality player, and it was great to actually play my final game alongside him. Even though he's a couple years older than me, I think he's maybe got one more left in the tank.
Any regrets, Conor?
No regrets, no. I think, you know, when we left school, a lot of people asked me, you know, could have left it here and other places that play higher up at an earlier stage and give yourself an opportunity. But I've been lucky to play with my close mates, and we've came up and did things that have been quite special at the club. And yeah, no regrets really. I look back on it, and I'm sure I'll reflect on a bit more in the months to come, and yeah, with a smile on my face. So yeah, definitely no regrets.
Well, no lifting the cup next Saturday at Murrayfield, but you will be lifting a glass or two because you'll be able to go to your teammate's wedding.
Yeah, no, Kyle Valance, who played seven for us, you know, over the years, my year at school, and we left together. I played 128 games, I think, for the club. So, yes, I'm a groomsman next week. You know, maybe that we're not playing is probably doesn't make it as conflicted as you would hope. So, yeah, that's made it a wee bit easier next week. But no, I'd always be at my friend's wedding, so hopefully he's not listening to us and makes it sound like it wouldn't be. But, yeah, no, it's yeah, Kyle's wedding next week, and we'll look forward to that, raise a glass. And, yeah, I'll definitely look back on this with a smile on my face.
and no one would ever suggest you threw the match today, of course.
Not at all, no. We were right in the fight, and you know, 55 minutes in, you know, 6 points up under sticks, and fair play to Akins, they held us out, and the interception, I think, changed the game, yellow card, and we're up against it. So I think Akins kind of took the opportunity and then put the kind of foot in the throat as such, and yeah, they were great. I thought they would play their nice brand of rugby, kind of first 20 and last 20 in the game, and that was the difference.
Well, it's been a phenomenal career. Not many players play for 14 years for the same club, 239 games. We wish you well in your retirement and indeed an impending fatherhood.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. And yeah, no, big thank you to Borders Rugby and the team, Stuart. You know, Stuart Cameron covered a lot of stuff for us back in the National Leagues and gave teams in the lower sides and the lower divisions a lot of publicity and got them on the map. So yeah, big thanks to you guys for covering our games, and yeah, just want to wish you guys all the best future as well.
Thank you, Connor.
Tremendous career and a real club man is Connor, and I'm sure we won't have heard the last of him in rugby circles in various capacities. But it's Ember Akies who are in the final to face Hoyt next Saturday at the National Stadium with a 7:15 kickoff. And Hugh also chatted with Ben Appleson, whose boot helped build that winning score for Akies.
Ben, congratulations. You're going to be playing at Murrayfield next week in the final against Hoyt.
I know, no, that does sound good. Season's not over yet. We've got Solly for one more game as well, which matters. And I think that's what's kind of driving us at the moment.
What do you think was the difference between the two teams today?
It was close. I mean, I think that interception try really did swing the game. If Mar score there, it could be a complete different final score. So well done to Gav, got that. And I do think from them, kind of momentum just was on our side. I think we kicked a little bit more as well in the second half and pinned them back and made them kind of run out or exit and give us the ball. But great game of rugby, real close all the way. And I just think, yeah, That was the turning point.
The yellow card made a difference as well, because for a while you were a man up.
Yeah, no, it really did. I mean, we lost two to the bin as well. We lost Cole and Robbie. I think we did pretty well during those 10-minute spells. We didn't shift too many points. But yeah, again, when that Marboy also went into the bin, I think we capitalised a wee bit and changed our game slightly.
If you'd gone on league form, then Mar would have been favourites, because they finished second in the league, you finished seventh. But yeah, Cup ties are different, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we all know, as a team, that we underperformed in the league. We lost quite a few games by just the score. So you turn those around and who knows where we'd have finished. I think that's also fueling our Cup run, the disappointment in our league position, because we've made the semis last 2 years in a row. So yeah, a wee bit disappointing, but that's why we're kind of giving our all in a Cup run.
Next week then at Murrayfield, Saturday evening, 7:15 kickoff against the Green Machine of Hoyt. You've got an advantage, I would suggest, because Hoyt will be tired. They've played a lot of games.
Yeah, no, that is true. They've had a lot of boys also playing the district stuff, which can be a positive but also a wee bit of a negative as well. Just would love to get over the line. We've had two really good games against them all year, both been pretty tight all the way through. They just somehow managed to find a way, which they do against a lot of teams. Really looking forward to it. They're a quality outfit, but hopefully we give it our all.
How much would it mean to Edinburgh Akies to lift the Scottish Cup?
Oh, it would be everything. Like I said, it's Jamie Soles, confirmed last year as well, and what he's done for Akies throughout his career here is just unbelievable. So if we could get him over the line at Murrayfield, I think it would be the fairy tale ending for everyone.
Well, one way or another, we will be there next Saturday night. Perfect. Here on Rugby Radio to watch Edinburgh Akies against Hoyt at Murrayfield. We wish you well in that
Thank
game.
Thank you very much. We'll see you there.
So, Dale, we've heard from Ben and Connor. We have a Hoyt versus Edinburgh Akies final.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the season, if you were to guess, or even a few months ago, if you were to guess that Edinburgh Akies were going to make it in the final, you perhaps would have raised a few eyebrows. But, you know, knowing what we knew in the lead-up to that semi-final, we knew that Mar were slightly depleted. And obviously, you know, going into the final, their squad was going to be heavily depleted. So it's probably a blessing in disguise that we've got an Edinburgh Akies side going to the final. But they went about their business very accomplished in the semi-final. You know, proper knockout rugby, making sure that they took their opportunities when they were available, and they get the bigger winning margin and obviously progress into the final. So, you know, it's going to be a big task for them. Hoyt are the form side for the last couple of years in Scottish club rugby. So they're hunting down another double off the back of what's been a couple of difficult weeks for them, and they've reacted really well. So it's going to be a really interesting final. The one thing is, it's a big park at Murrayfield, and there's elements of that really do play in Edinburgh Akies' hands. Yes, Hoyt have a really good back division, but I think that there's some areas on that pitch where, in terms of the back row, they're really athletic in the back row for Edinburgh Akies, as well as their second rows. yeah, they like to play expansive rugby, and I think their pitch could at Murrayfield could really come into play and benefit Inverarkies. If they've got to find a way to win a game, they're going to have to move this Hoik pack about and try and pick some spaces out wide.
And Hoik do have a good record in recent years over Inverarkies. Having said that, they've got over the line usually very late in the game by a couple of points, if that.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters going into a cup final. It's a completely different environment for these. Well, certainly Inverarkies, they've not been in a cup final for years. So, you know, it's great to see them get there because they're such a historic club. So, you know, in terms of them getting to the final and being able to participate, is going to be a huge moment for them in their history. And they'll want to win. So, you know, they've got to approach the game thinking about the things that they do well. And then looking at things that Hoik do well and trying to tip the balance somewhat and try and tip it in their favour. They've got really, really good players in their squad. A lot of really impressive players, good leaders, especially the inclusion of likes of Cal Davis in the front row. Comes with a lot of experience, great engine, really smart rugby player as well. But, you know, Patrick Ritchie at scrum half has been a really impressive player as well. So, you know, there's a lot of good players in that Inverarkies side. I'm sure they'll just all be hoping if they can play their best game on Saturday, then there's a chance that they could upset the odds and topple Hoik.
And we mentioned Conor Bickerstaff retiring earlier in the programme. Jamie Sole will be last game for him on Saturday.
Well, one part of that I knew, the other part I didn't. So, firstly, Conor Bickerstaff, you know, I consider myself really fortunate to do what I do at weekends. You know, probably a horrific rugby player at best. So to go around the country and, you know, be able to watch the abundance of really good players that some make it to the highest level, some perhaps don't get the same opportunities, but Conor Bickerstaff's name is amongst those players that, you know, have certainly been on the cusp and there or thereabouts. Him and, you know, his brother are phenomenal servants to that Mar Rugby Club in what has been undoubtedly their most successful period in their club history. You know, he's going to retire as a Premiership champion. He's a losing cup finalist, yes, but he's played at Murrayfield in a Mar side that, if you'd asked them 10, 12 years ago, do you think Mar would be able to do that? Like, I don't care what they say. Yes, they'd have dreamt of it, but I don't think they would have realistically thought that would be possible. So, you know, he's a phenomenal player, really good player, humble. And I think what he spoke to Hugh, it just highlights some of the focuses that come into sharp focus when you're a bit older as a rugby player. You know, the injuries, the family, the business, those sort of things start coming to the fore and you've got to make difficult decisions. So, and as for Jamie Sole, obviously he's a player that's kind of reinvented himself at Inverarkies.
Yeah, started as a back.
Started as a back and then moved into the back row. And I think, coming back to my previous point about the way that Inverarkies play, they've got good rugby players littered throughout their squad. Jamie Sole being one of them. He's been omnipresent almost in the Sevens circuit for a few years for Inverarkies. Obviously comes with a rich history as well at Murrayfield. So, you know, it would be some story if Jamie Sole's last game in an Inverarkies shirt was, you know, participating and lifting the trophy in the Scottish Cup, obviously with the heritage that he has in that name. So it just adds a little bit more spice to this game, a little bit more of a story to what is going to be a really interesting fixture between these two sides, because few could have called it. You know, you would have, yes, you knew that either Curry or Hoik were going to get there, but the money was on probably either Heriots or Mar getting there, and Inverarkies have upset them both and rightfully earned their place in the final.
7:15 kickoff. There's been a lot of talk about that. I know, speaking to Gary Muir the other day, the team manager of Hoik, he was saying they'd rather have played it even at 12:30 rather than 7:15. I suppose when you whoever wins, Inverarkies or Hoik, at the end of the day it'll be about 9:30. The time they've got changed and everything, no time to celebrate at night.
Yeah, it's I've seen the times come out for the finals weekend, and obviously from last year it's a change because it wasn't that late in the cup final, but I don't think the timing won't really come into the mindset of the players. It's just the whole event of that, you know, that evening's rugby or day's rugby, because is there going to be a lot of people, which in the old days there used to be, but is there going to be a lot of people from the Shield final or the women's finals that are there that are going to stick about Murrayfield if they've won or lost to take in the rest of the event? Because I remember when we, as a Peebles player, we got to the Shield final to play Glasgow Hawks, which were managed by Peter Wright, who is obviously going to be there again with Lass Wade this year. So we were defeated by Glasgow Hawks, and we hung about and we watched the rest of the rugby. So we were able, I think it was Melrose Air or Melrose Heriots in the final, and we stayed about and watched that because you were part of something. there's maybe a bit of a detachment now. You're maybe not part of much. You're part of your kind of game, and then they move on and wheel out the next one. So, you know, the fixtures, the timings of them are probably a little bit unfortunate. But, you know, come back at seven, both those clubs, they'll not matter a jot. The spectators will have made a conscious effort to get there to back their teams, such as the other teams as well. Like, we've obviously, Rugby Radio, there's a lot of rugby teams going to be either at Scottish Gas Murrayfield or the Hive Stadium in behind. So there's going to be, you know, a lot of rugby being played in the capital this weekend, a lot of spectators, a lot of families, a lot of stories. But yeah, I don't think the kick-off time will come much into the mindset of the players come back at seven.
It's something I'm going to mention now, because it has been mentioned to me a lot, and I think it's only fair to talk about it, and that is the Women's Cup final, obviously, which is happening just before the showpiece, the 7:15 big event for the men's competition, the men's final. Obviously, great for women's rugby to see it being promoted and live on BBC Alba, fantastic. No problem with that at all. But why isn't the men?
I'm not sure. It used to be. I've had many a story with Nicky Walker about the time that I watched on terrestrial TV him score that extra time winning try in the final. It was something that, as a youngster, kind of inspired me to want to go and play at the highest level. Unfortunately, that never happened. But, you know, it was inspiring for me. The one thing is that with the women's game being on TV, it's going to be inspiring for young women. And obviously, you know, after the Six Nations performance for Scotland, it's another positive. So, in isolation, it's getting its coverage. It is slightly unfortunate that the reciprocal final for the men's doesn't get the same. But it's a business decision, or it's a decision out with our hands. Now, I watched the Sarah Beeny Cup final last year. I was very impressed with the level of it. It was a good final. Bruce Miller, our own Bruce Miller, was involved in that as well, and it was good rugby. But the men's final was also good rugby, and it had its story. So, you know, comparing two rugby games, it was unfortunate that one of them definitely wasn't on TV in any format. But yeah, not sure behind the decision about that. But ultimately, it's unfortunate that in a time where club rugby probably needs a bit of backing, especially after what's going to happen at Super Series, I'll be interested to see how the kind of coverage of it pans out. Is it going to continue as it is, where independent media outlets such as Rugby Radio, Borders Rugby TV, Offside Line, cover club rugby on behalf of Scottish rugby, pretty much? Or are they going to start to channel something more in towards that space? You know, and it's the same for the women's game. They do get a lot of coverage, obviously, in this weekend, for example, BBC Alba. But apart from that, their club game isn't really promoted too much. Our elite club game, if you will, the Super Series, is promoted. So obviously the male aspect of that, our next level, our highest level of club rugby, gets a lot of media attention. The women's equivalent, that is probably the level. You know, that's their peak. So, you know, obviously their Premiership final was streamed, and obviously this is on BBC Alba, but our product equivalent probably at the moment is our Super Series.
Interesting points there. So we've heard from Mar and Ackies. Let's hear from Hoik captain Sean Muir, who's looking forward to Saturday. Here are his thoughts.
Very excited for the game this weekend in the Scottish Cup final against Edinburgh Ackies. It's a great occasion to play at Murrayfield in a contest of Scottish Cup. Although the Cup's probably divided opinions in the last few years, it's still huge for any player to be playing in this game on the main pitch. So extremely looking forward to it. It's also a start of a massive few weeks for the club. Looking forward to Ackies. They've hit a bit of form the last few weeks, and they've been very impressive in their wins against Heriots and Mar. So we're not taking them lightly. We know the game they'll bring. They'll look to throw the ball about and play some nice rugby. But look, we've had two close games with them this year, and they've arguably got their strongest team on the park now, so key men back. So we're under no illusions how tough it's going to be. The test they'll pose us, but look, we are massively confident in our ability and our team we'll have on the park. And if we do the right things and follow the game plan the coaches will put in place and stick to our structures, I'm quite confident we'll get the correct result come Saturday evening.
Sean Muir, now Hoik have experience of playing on the national pitch. Ackies don't, certainly not the players that they've got at the moment, because as you said, it was a long time ago when they were involved in finals activity at the National Stadium. Wide pitch, of course, plenty of space for both sets of backs. They'll enjoy that. And of course, Hoik's got their secret weapon, Ronan McKean, who always rises to the big occasion, doesn't he? As well as the centre partnership of Lee Armstrong and Andrew Mitchell, who are now back fully fit.
Yeah, I think obviously Sean Muir's alluded to it, that they've got a couple of key players coming back, and Rory McKean with a great try last year in the final, you know, and he scored that great try in the Premiership final as well. So, you know, he's a big game player for Hoyk, and they'll welcome him back. But we would be naive to fully focus on the likes of Andrew Mitchell and Lee Armstrong, really, really good players, going into a game when you've carried injuries or over the last few weeks in a cup final, when the pressure's on and you're trying to meet a deadline. That's where it can become win or bust for coaching teams. Now, if they line up in the centre and they get through the whole game unscathed, I've got little to no doubt that they will have a huge impact on where that game is going to go. They're really phenomenal players. You know, they're probably, you know, Kirk Ford in there as well. Andrew Mitchell, for me, is probably the pick of the bunch in the backs for what he is able to do when he's at the top of his game. You know, he's obviously tried and to immerse himself in the semi-pro environment. I just don't think, from my opinion, don't know anything, but it just seems like he didn't enjoy it, and he's really enjoying his rugby at the moment. He looks like he's enjoying playing for Hoyk, which, you know, is a dangerous recipe for opposition, but, you know, you look on the other side, you look at that Edinburghese side and the players that they do have. You know, we watched them against Kelso at Raeburn Place, you know, and they almost threw the game away because the conditions were really poor, I thought, and there was times where they just were able to stretch Kelso on a reasonably narrow pitch. They were able to stretch Kelso and get the ball into space and finish tries off. Like, so Robbie Kent's a, you know, a really dangerous player. They've got a lot of really good players in that lineup. So coming into the weekend, I think that going back to the point about the two centres, one of them takes a knock, which you're going to reshuffle the deck again, and you're taking out a really key component in that team. So, you know, the game's going to be won and lost in these little fine areas. I'm really hoping it's not a cakewalk. I hope that it's not one of those games where Hoyk are really up for it and then catch an Edinburghese team shell-shocked. I do hope that if Edinburghese come into this game and they're all up for it, I think we could be in for a real cracking final.
Of course, we had a sort of a little taste, didn't we, with the Edinburgh game against the South, and there was a lot of Edinburghese players in that side, and they certainly, you know, were very competitive against what was more or less a Hoyk pack.
I think the Inter-District Championship did highlight a few things with the Edinburgh teams as a whole, but one of them that it did highlight was that Edinburghese has a lot of really talented players throughout their squad, and I think evidence of that is, you know, obviously in their back division, we knew what Max Wallace was like. We've been introduced to him before. He's a really, really good player. He played for Cali. But obviously out with that, in the forwards, I think that this is where they're completely different to Hoyk. Hoyk are really structured, direct. They're going to be really physical up front. And although there'll be elements of that from Edinburghese, they have it in their kind of repertoire to be able to play off the cuff a little bit more. And probably, as much as they're structured, they do have a little bit more creative freedom. So, you know, the players, like, in their middle row and their back row, those players are really good at linking up. Your likes of Mills and, you know, the second rows have got a really high skill set. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how those clashes of styles work on a big, big pitch like Murrayfield. Because there's two ways about that, is the fact that if Edinburghese are able to get possession, control the ball and play with a bit of width and try and really move the pack about, they could get a lot of joy. But also, with the same mind, if Hoyk are really direct and enjoy possession, there's going to be two elements. Either they're going to be getting loads of line breaks and breaking tackles, or they're going to be able just to suffocate Edinburghese and condense them in one area, and it'll allow their players like Sam Mitchell and Lee Armstrong to cut angles, change lines, change the point of attack, and all of a sudden Hoyk are in behind. So, you know, I think it's probably a more interesting game than Hoyk versus Mar or Hoyk versus Curry, because they clash too much almost, and it might be a bit of a slugfest, where this is going to be interesting, because Edinburghese have to roll the dice to win this game. They've got to play attacking rugby, and I think the pitch allows that. So, you know, I think it's setting up to be a really interesting final. If it was Heriot's, I'd probably be saying the same thing. They've got a really good forward pack, but in the backs they do have that's able to kind of unleash something different, and I think Edinburghese have that.
So 7:15 kick-off for that one on Saturday. Now, the League Cup final taking place earlier in the day at 1:45. That's between Falkirk and Lasswade. Peebles pulled out, remember, to concentrate on the Border League, so that's why they aren't in that competition. But fair to say, with 1 point in each of the semi-finals separating the sides, we could easily have had a Newton Stewart v Allan Glen's final.
Yeah, I think obviously when we were previewing it last week, we knew there were going to be tight semi-finals, particularly the Falkirk-Newton-Stewart one, with the return of all the players that were involved in the Inter-District Championship. But obviously Falkirk, you know, probably deserve to go through. It would have been great to see Newton Stewart get a chance to play at Murrayfield, but Falkirk get a chance to go back again and, you know, compete in a final after competing for the Shield a few years ago. And same with Lass Wade. Obviously, they've got another chance to go to the National Stadium, and probably a more interesting tie. Alan Glenn's just about able to get over the line, and what a story that would have been. But obviously, it's going to be a repeat of the fixture we've seen a couple of weeks ago. Different stadium, different teams, different guys. So it's going to be an interesting Shield final as well. And I think, you know, out of those two teams, Falkirk specifically, they're almost, yeah, Falkirk have the backs, Lass Wade have the forwards. So again, it maybe comes down to the pitch size and getting a bit of parity up front for Falkirk.
I was going to say, this one's got Peter Wright's name written all over, keeping the backs away. And it's a big pitch, as we mentioned, a very wide, expansive pitch at the National Stadium. And if Peter Wright and his men can stop them from getting any ball, then, you know, who knows what it's going to be like. But it's going to be a real game of chess, isn't it?
Yeah, Peter Wright's doing all right for a coach that's retired for the last 5 years, isn't he? But he... yeah, obviously, Lass Wade are they're a big team up front. You know, when you see their team announcement on social media, you almost have to put your phone in landscape just to fit a few of the boys in, because they're pretty big. But you know, that's part of their kind of game plan. You've got to play at your strengths, and if you've got a really big pack, it's physical, and you know, and their back row is actually quite lightweight when you look at them as well. They're not like the biggest back row, but. You know, I think as you go further down the leagues into the Nationals, then, you know, squads are probably made up of, you know, different shapes and sizes. But ultimately, Lass Wade up front are really, really strong. One of their backs got man of the match in the semi-final against Alan Glens, which they announced as a nervy affair. So they knew it was nip and tuck. But, you know, it's a final. It's the National Stadium. A lot of these boys will never, ever have played there, and they'll never play there again. So, you know, it's a chance to leave it all out in the pitch and try and pick up some silverware, because these opportunities for a club, they're few and far between. You know, yes, you'll sometimes drop down leagues and you'll get strong again, you'll get promoted and you'll win championships, and that's great, but the cup final is an opportunity to pick up some real silverware that's got loads of memories attached to it because of the venue, because of where you are and the experience and the ticket build-up and stuff like that. I remember it back from... You know, people, I didn't actually get to play, never got to play at Murrayfield, but the build up to it, going around the town, selling tickets, having flags flying from your cars just to try and get up a bit of business, it has a bit of a buzz in the community. So, you know, both those clubs will be feeling it, and they want to be getting as many people to the stadium as possible.
Some great characters as well. Harry Russell, obviously captaining Falkirk, scrum half, brother of Finn. And then you've got people like Dale Robertson for Lass Wade, who's obviously towards the end of his career. And what a finish that would make for him.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you've highlighted a Falkirk back and a Lass Wade forward. So, yeah, Dale Robertson, obviously, in his time with Burramuir as well, he's played at the highest level when Burramuir were up the pyramid, and he's went back to Lass Wade, and he comes with a lot of experience, but he's still a really valuable player for Lass Wade. It's not that, you know, you say he's at the kind of the other end of his career, he's still as impactful. We've seen that in the game against Peebles in National 2 when he went off. You know, it was an uphill battle after that because he's so important to Lass Wade. But it's likewise with Harry Russell. We've seen when he was playing for Caledonia Reds that, you know, what importance he has on a game, his pace, his vision, his, you know, just being a cheeky scrum half. He's a real linchpin for that Falkirk side, but also the Falls as well. Really top class players. So, you know, providing that both sides get the fittest squads out possible, again, it's going to be another interesting final. And it'll be good. You know, you want to have that atmosphere as well, but it'll be good if the neutrals are able to travel to the National Stadium and take it in. There's a lot of rugby on. You know, there always is, and I think that's part of the moan about Kings of the Sevens and what have you. But, you know, it's an opportunity if the weather's good on a Saturday, get to the National Stadium and watch some good games of rugby.
Yeah, plenty of rugby about, including, obviously, the Sarah Beeny Cup final as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Obviously, the Cup is being played in a kind of pool format, and I think the kind of format of the competition itself has probably been a bit of a bone of contention for some of the sides, because, obviously, you had the Celtic Cup, which was getting played at the same time. So a lot of the players who were involved in these squads have been, you know, sometimes withdrawn from those teams and then reintroduced. So sometimes there's been a little bit of a kind of turnaround with the, you know, with the squads that you see. But in the final, obviously, we've got Watsonians, Bruce Miller's own Watsonians, who are going to be playing Hillhead Jordan Hill. So it's obviously named after Sarah Beeny, who was a back row forward who lost her life prematurely in 2005. So it's obviously played in her memory, and it's something which is it's probably been a bit of a trailblazer in the women's game, and something that a lot of the clubs are really hold really highly. So probably in an era where our cup competition has been diluted by some of the other things we've got going on, the Sarah Beeny Cup is certainly a little bit of a kind of flagship tournament for the women's game. But obviously Watsonians are the holders. They won last year in a really competitive final against Kirstorfin Cougars, so they'll be hoping to retain it against Hillhead Jordan Hill. So, you know, really interesting. It was tight during the pool kind of campaign that they had, so it's a repeat of that game, and I'm sure Bruce Miller will have his team well versed, because they were narrowly defeated by Stirling County in the Premiership playoff final. So they obviously could have been on coast for a double, but as it is, they've just got the Sarah Beeny Cup to play for.
How do we get to these two competing in the final? Because there was a pool system, wasn't there? But there's a story behind it.
Yeah, it's a pool system, so they've all played each other pretty much in the pool stages. Stirling County were a point behind Hillhead and Watsonian, so really it's came down to bonus points. Stirling County have been not able to pick up 6 bonus points from the games that they played. They've lost, you know, 1 point somewhere, which has meant that the points difference doesn't really come into it. So they had a huge 100-point victory against Garioch, and then not able to really utilise that when it comes down to positions. But Stirling County have got loads of tremendous players. They were obviously Premiership champions as well, so they could have had a tilt at the double. It could have almost been a repeat of the Premiership final, you know, Stirling County versus Watsonians. But the players likes of the Ainsworths have been some of those players that have been involved in the Celtic Challenge. You know, Ainsworth was playing, Katie Ainsworth was playing at the Melrose Sevens of the week there as well. And I'm a relative newcomer to women's rugby, and it's from the things that we've been covering as well. But certainly, she was player of the match that day. She was phenomenal in the playoff final, and she's a really really talented player. But obviously, she won't get an opportunity to play at the Sarah Beeny Cup final. But Watsonians are also a very well versed team. A lot of representatives in the Edinburgh team for the Celtic Challenge. So yeah, it'll be a competitive final. Watsonians Hillhead played out a really tight game in the original pool stages, so we'll be hoping for an equally tight affair.
And I think the correct pronunciation is Gary, isn't it, instead of Garioch?
I don't know.
They have played Kelso Ladies. I'm pretty sure it's Gary, so apologies if we got that wrong. Well, let's go on to the Sevens then. And at Hoyk, it was a win for Kelso against Gala in the final. That was their third win of the season from 4 rounds. They did it the hard way as well. They came back from 90-0 down to draw with Heriots in the first tie. Then both Heriots and Kelso had to pile on the points against Berwick, and whoever got the best points difference would go through to the semis. Kelso posted 68 without reply, and then Heriots came on the field 61 without reply. So it was Kelso who progressed in that one. Then they beat Embrackies by a point and overcame Gala in the final to lift the trophy for the first time in 27 years. But a good club competition and plenty of controversy and action.
Yeah, I think it's pronounced Kelsey, so apologies to anybody for Kelsey who's offended by that. But yeah, you know, it was obviously the third tournament that they picked up this season in the Kings of the Sevens, and they're a really good team. But, you know, I think you'll come on to it shortly. You know, I think it's a bit of a level playing field in the Kings of the Sevens so far this season, and I think there's some teams who don't like playing other teams, and, you know, Jed and Kelso being one of them. Obviously, Kelso didn't come across Jed at the Hoyk Sevens, but Jed have that patience and starvation of possession on other teams that Kelso are pretty good at reacting, pretty good at almost playing that same brand of rugby, but just not as polished. So, you know, but obviously the Hoyk Sevens are really good outing for them. A couple of really tough games as well just to squeeze through, but obviously the controversy coming down to the points tally. We heard Ali Grieve at Berwick Sevens, you know, talking about how there was a bit of a pride element and making sure that they didn't get completely pumped in 2 games, although they did. But then the relationship between Kelso and Berwick kind of came to the fore, and they wanted to do their kind of affiliated club a favour in the pool stages to let them progress, which ultimately that's fine, because it's still, there's a game of rugby to play, and Heriots had to find a way to win it. It just happened they were playing 2 teams pretty much, so yeah, difficult for them. But obviously Kelso ultimate victors in the end.
So Berwick Sevens came next, and Kelso got to the semi-final but were put out by Jed, who we mentioned, who also beat them of course at Melrose the previous week. So we had a Jed Melrose final, with Melrose getting past Gala in their semi, and they won fairly comfortably to lift the trophy for the first time for them at Berwick since 2002. So a couple of long-standing records being broken there.
Now, obviously, on Sunday, it was an equally interesting tournament. Once the pool stages had gotten done and dusted, there was obviously a couple of dead rubbers in there. But overall, you know, in the end, the difficult game, Kelso versus Jed, and I'd alluded to it before, you know, Jed have kind of got the marker of Kelso so far this season, knocking them out Melrose Sevens. They've not encountered them other than that. But the final probably did illustrate a little bit of the legginess, perhaps, it was in Jed, and they weren't really as prepared as what that Melrose side was. You know, in terms of the squad that Melrose has, they've got a good blend of experience and quality, and also a bit of kind of raw youth. You know, the players like Zimakowski and Pilcher that came on and made a good impact, but obviously the class of Hutchison, but the experience of Colvin as well. That was what ultimately won them the final. So, you know, great reaction from going one try down. Jed looked like they were playing that patient build-up and being able to reserve their energy, but all of a sudden, you know, Melrose went into a really big lead, which means that teams panic, and, you know, as soon as the kind of clock starts ticking down, you panic more and more, and Jed just weren't able to get back into the game, which, you know, for long stints of it, Melrose just controlled possession. We saw it in the semi-final against Gala. There were 7 minutes, Melrose had the ball, and in the second half, Gallo just got told, you need the ball. All of a sudden, they had it for about 5 minutes, then coughed up possession, and once they gave it back to Melrose, you know, you just knew Gallo were not getting that ball back off them. So, you know, they approached the tournament really well, obviously looked at the squad that Melrose could deploy on both days, and they went heavy on the Sunday, and it's reaped its rewards.
We spoke with Melrose's hat-trick hero in the final, Struan Hutchison, and also Lewis Young from Jed Forest.
Yeah, Lewis, obviously, well done for getting to the final of this this tournament. But obviously, just coming up short, but so close. But obviously in your pool stages, not really tested, but able to get some rugby into the legs. But sometimes that doesn't benefit you as you go through the tournament.
I think it's a really heavy field now as well with the rain. And Kelso in the semi really took it out of us, I think. Although we watched the Gala Melrose game and felt like we maybe had a chance there. We kind of went into our shells there in the final, and, you know, gave them a couple of scores and up, and then we were chasing the game. It's always difficult against Melrose.
And obviously before the Melrose tournament, there wasn't a lot of preparation within the team at Jed. Able to get past Kelso in that one, obviously able to beat them again today, but, you know, rugby sevens just kind of runs through your squad at the moment. A lot of youngsters coming through, but still a lot of experienced players like yourself, your brother Rory Marshall. Yeah.
No, we do. We've got a lot of experience there. We do have some young guys there as well, and it's about getting the numbers to train and then try to develop everybody that were there. And you know, I'm at the age where I kind of do the double weekenders now, so it was like pick a tournament, and I was like, we'll just do Berwick this weekend. But you know, we do have some guys that played yesterday that played really well yesterday that didn't make the squad but were unavailable today. So come Saturday, I think you add them into our squad there, and hopefully it gets stronger. Yeah.
How are you finding it? I mean, 10 years since you first started playing, and you know there were times obviously we remember you kind of sprinting from one end to the other. I mean, those days are kind of gone now, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. You know, it used to be great, I thought, back in the day when it was, you know, Saturday, Sunday, every weekend. But I could run then. Now the legs feel like they're really, really heavy, and aches and pains are never very clever on Monday morning.
Yes, yeah. when you hit your 30s, as Dale would know.
I didn't even have a chance to hit my 30s playing rugby. There was a couple of moments in that game that you could see that you were having a conversation with Andrew Skeen, and particularly that try. Just before that, you were having quite a polite conversation with him. Talk me through what your thought process was in that try that Struan Hutchison got.
We felt like Robbie Shearer-Gibb was being held into the ruck, and that's where we got pinged. He did quite clearly say that Robbie made no effort to get the ruck, which is, if that's his view, that's his view. The good thing about Andrew Skeen is you can speak to him, and you know, you respect that. He made the decision, and you just have to get on with it. But there was a couple there that we felt were a bit hard done by. Then again, he turned the call on the 5 metre line there, where I felt like we actually did take the ball over the line, so it could have went either way.
So targets now for Jed Forest, obviously fully concentrated on sevens. Obviously, no thoughts about 15s at the moment, but you know, you'll be hoping to pick up a tournament win this season.
Yeah, I think you know, we're quite relaxed about everything at the minute. We don't want to put too much pressure under ourselves. If you know, we pick up a few tournaments before Jed, then that would be great. A bit of confidence between the boys, but we really try to develop the young guys as well. They're the future of the club, and you know, that's the main focus for us, but it would be good to pick up a couple of trophies for the next few tournaments.
And of course, we've got Kelso at the top of the table, 35 points. You've beaten them twice.
I think, you know, I've been in teams when there is a sort of bogey team that you come up against. You know, for years, we couldn't beat Watsonians. Gala were one of them one year. And I think maybe, you know, we've played Kelso twice, we've beat them twice. It's maybe just a bit of luck that way, but you know, we really targeted that game there. That's what we wanted today, and you know, that's twice we've beat them now. So if we get them at Langham, even better.
Yes, are you at the Langham one?
Yeah, we'll be at the Langham one.
Great.
It's just one tournament next week, so I'll be happy to do that.
Commiserations, obviously, for the runners up, but I mean, it's seven valuable points towards it. You're up to fifth place, in fact, in the table, into double figures. And you know, as we know, a lot can change in a couple of tournaments. So we wish you the best. Then we've got the tough Kelso stroke Earlston double weekend. Which one are you going to do for that?
I don't know. I might just pick Earlston. I'll wait and see what the draw's like at both.
It's a bank holiday.
I'd like to take Kelso at their own sevens, mind.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a bank holiday. You'll be fine.
Well, good to see you again. We'll catch up with you later. We're going to pass the microphone over to Struan Hutchison.
Obviously, an immense final, Struan. Like, obviously, from your point of view, you've had a really, really good tournament. Ultimately, he's come out on top against a Jed Forest side after an equally difficult semi-final against Gala, so you must be pretty chuffed with the efforts.
Yeah, absolutely, and like we talk about that, like it's not who scores the points or the tries, you know, it's that team effort and that kind of team ethos working hard for one another. And I think it's a squad of 12 today, so I think all 12 when they got onto the pitch kind of really worked hard for each other. As you said, a tough semi-final and then a tough final there, but really proud of like the boys' character. I think 11 out of the 12 it was just me that didn't play at Hoyt yesterday, so a lot of these guys have backed up their efforts yesterday. And that was one of the first things we said today. Everyone's going to be sore, everyone's going to be hurt, and it's kind of like a mindset thing, these double weekenders. So yeah, just really, really pleased with the efforts, and to get over the line in two tight games was kind of shows the character from us this weekend. So
obviously conceded early against Jed Forest and then scored straight away, and after that it was almost like a shot in the arm. It was almost like you know, you kind of woke up after that first try. And then from there, you never really looked back against a Jed Forest side who you starved of possession.
Yeah, and look, for me, like rugby sevens is a game of momentum. And as you said, Jed scored first, so it was important that we then scored again. When it gets to sort of three, four score games, like that's when you're chasing it. Looking back to last weekend against Selkirk, it was a three score game. Then it went to a four score game, and that's probably when you think like we're down and out. Jed scored first, but we just stuck to our process, stuck to our structure. We just said, look, let's get our hands on the ball, as you said, starved them of possession. And we managed to get a try to level it up, and then obviously Hamish Weir with some real good footwork, nice offload to Donald Support. And again, that's probably one thing we've taken away from Melrose, is backing up that player. So once you've passed the ball, get on their shoulder. People like Donald, Hamish, even BC, you know, they've got good footwork, and then we're getting on their shoulder for the offloads.
And it's a squad as well. You said at the start, squad is 12. It's really interesting, the Melrose approach compared to some other teams. You've got a lot of confidence in that squad. You know, sometimes you might see, like, say yourself or Bruce Colvin going off, and other players who are not regular names yet coming on. There's a real trust in that squad, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, look, I think a lot of the guys, there's only a few that probably weren't involved in that Kings of the Seven squad from last year or last season. So, look at that. For me, it's perfect opportunity coming to tournaments like this when it is a squad of 12 where we can kind of give some guys some game time and get them up to speed. And if I think back for me as a youngster or a little bit younger, like with people like Bob Christie, Fraser Thompson, Craig Jackson, like it was the same, you know. You learn off those guys, and when they come off and you go on the pitch, you've got to really put your hand up, and like, you know, that's how you get better, and that's how you learn it. It's got to be sustainable. We can't just have the same 7-10 people on the pitch. We've got to, as a club, keep developing people and pulling them through.
Well, we're at the halfway stage now at the moment. Kelso 35 points at the top, but my goodness, it's close now, because second Gala 20, Selkirk 19, and you're on 18. Then there's a bit of a gap back to Jed Forest, 8 points below that. You know yourself, obviously, plenty of points still on offer, 50 to go. And you'll get a little bit of satisfaction knowing that Jed Forest have beaten Kelso a couple of times as well. And obviously, beginning to click now from Mel's point of view, there's a real target there.
Yeah, 100%, and I might be wrong. I don't know if we've played Kelso yet, so you know, seeing them win at Hoyt yesterday and getting three wins out of four, obviously Melrose being a tough competition to win, like I think you said earlier, there's a bit of a target on Kelso's back. And we sat down as a group on Tuesday and kind of reviewed Melrose and said, look, that's not good enough. But again, some of the senior players that have been around Kings of the Sevens for longer have said the double weekenders are huge. So we've obviously got Hoyt Berwick and then Kelso Earlston. Like, if you can pick up points in those tournaments, it's really big. I mean, obviously every tournament you want to pick up some points, but we've obviously got 15 this weekend, which is, as you said, it's put us right back in the mix, and obviously Kelso going out in a semi. So yeah, look, we'll see what the Langham draw brings, and then as I said, it's that massive kind of move-in weekend, if you like. It's that Kelso Earlston weekend where if you come out of that with some decent points, you're right in the mix, and you're putting your hand up for that Kings of the Sevens with two tournaments to go after that.
It's a different campaign to any other one that I can remember, because there was always a team coming into it that were head and shoulders, and it just happened to usually be Melrose. But obviously it's a kind of different campaign now. So in terms of your preparation, in terms of looking at the teams, there's no real team that would think of themselves as the top team. How do you approach that as a kind of club? Because you don't really know. You're preparing for loads of different aspects of games. So, yeah. You know, how are you approaching that midweek?
Yeah, so the way that we would do it is obviously focus on ourselves and get, as I think I mentioned the word process, like get our processes right. So set piece is massive, kickoffs and sevens is key, and your kind of line out as well. And then obviously our attack and defensive, we've got some kind of principles. So what are our maybe three headline attack principles? What are our three defensive principles? Really stick to them. And we feel as a squad and as a coaching group and a manager group that if we get our game right, like our process and our attack and defence principles, we're good enough to beat anyone. Don't get me wrong, like when you play against like your Jeds, Aki's, Kelso, Selkirk's and all the teams, like we will do a little bit of sort of, you know, how do they set up for kickoff, what's their kind of key players, what's their key plays, you know, what kind of things do they do with their game, and you know, we will slightly change how we prepare, but I think the main message out of that is it's we're focused on ourselves, and you know, we like to concentrate on our own performance, and if we get that right, we feel we'll beat anyone on our day.
Well, just finally, next season, back to the 15s, of course, it's all change. Melrose are back in the Premiership, which is great news for Borders Rugby, great news for Melrose as well. You've played for Southern Knights, you've played for Melrose. How's everyone kind of coming together for this? Because it's a big change.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you've said, there is a big change coming. When I heard the news, like I was obviously absolutely delighted. Like Melrose is my home club, and the last few years I've decided to play with them in National One. So to go back into that Premiership, that top division of Scottish club rugby is great. You know, in terms of like Knights and Melrose coming together, you know, the Knights are now right into their sprint season, so they'll probably, you know, take care of that over the next sort of 6, 7, 8 weeks, however long that goes on for. And then I'm sure, you know, people like Rob Moffat, director rugby, Ian Chisholm, Scott White will hopefully be having some conversations looking ahead to next season. Again, if I bring it back to Melrose and us, you know, we've got Kings of the Sevens, we'll focus on that. And then, you know, as I say, kind of the powers above or the people that are running the club will hopefully be having these conversations to prepare. But look, I think we need to have a stronger playing squad as we can next year. There's no doubts about it that it's going to be a step up. I think we finished like 6th or 7th in National One, so we're under no illusions that we need to get better ourselves as individuals, and we also probably need to strengthen the squad in some key positions if we are going to compete in that Premiership. It's going to be a tough old league with three going down, but look, I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but we've got sevens, then we've got summer, and then I'm like really looking forward to it, exactly, and getting stuck in come like September time when it all kicks off again.
Interesting to hear what he had to say about the new season, Strew, in there.
Yeah, it was actually. It was almost textbook in terms of his reply. I didn't think he would lift too many lids in terms of what's going on at Melrose, which you wouldn't expect him to. But it was also quite accurate. I think it was good to hear him and refreshing to hear him talk about the fact that he knows it's a big task, and even mentioning the fact that they finished mid-table is an ominous observation if you're a player within that club, is to kind of quantify the task that you're going to be encountering next season. So, honest, frank, but obviously it's positive to see that Melrose are putting in a bit of work behind the scenes to make sure that they're really strong next year. I've been an advocate for Kelso this season because the rugby they've played and the way that they play has been phenomenal. The Hoik in terms of rugby aspects as well this season have been head and shoulders above everybody. It was the same last year. You know, and there's teams like Small Team Peebles as well. I think, you know, they've carried themselves really well. But Scottish rugby is probably a better place with a really strong Melrose side in there or thereabouts. Same with there. So the more that we get these teams back competitive and we see a really, really competitive, high-quality Premiership, the better. So it's good to see that Melrose are obviously putting a bit of work in off the field to try and make that happen.
Well, next up on the Kings of the Seven circuit is the Langham Sevens, round 6. The draw is, again, it's a pool system. Pool A, you have Gala, Peebles and Berwick. Pool B, Selkirk, Kelso and Watsonians. Pool C is Heriot's, Jed Forrest and Edinburgh Accies. And Pool D, Langham, the President Seven. Good to see them again. And Melrose, obviously the present seven, are in for Hoik, who obviously have bigger fish to fry at the cup final this particular Saturday. Now, the Kings of the Sevens table looks like this. Kelso 35, Gala 20, Selkirk 19, Melrose 18, Jed Forrest 10, Peebles 9, Watsonians and Embrakis both on 8, Hoik 7, and Heriots and Berwick both having 3 points. So we're at the halfway stage at the moment. How do you see things going?
I still think that Kelso are the strongest squad in the Kings of the Sevens, but there's not much between them because the teams underneath, you know, Gala have been a consistent surprise package, I think. You know, there are not a lot of household names in there, but in terms of Sevens quality and their direction has been really impressive. Selkirk probably got a stronger squad, certainly a stronger start in Seven. So on any given day, they could beat Gala. Gala could beat Kelso. But the other two squads underneath, you know, those five teams at the top are definitely at the moment the top five teams in the Kings of the Sevens. And there's not a lot to give between them. I think Kelso have got off to a phenomenal start in the Kings of the Sevens league. You know, obviously we're winning those three tournaments. And now it's just up for everybody else to try and chase them down. And it depends when are you going to steal points off. You know, so I heard Struan Hutchison talk about the double weekends and things when it's going to be Kelso and Earlston. When are you going to steal points off teams? Because unless you draw Kelso in the opening round and it's a knockout and you can put them out, they're going to be picking up points from now until the end of the campaign. So, you know, are they going to get 50 points? Are they going to get to every single quarter final and then get knocked out? Or are they going to get to the semi-finals of their pool stages and pick up, you know, at least 25 points? We don't know. But if they pick up 25 points between now and the end of the campaign, the other teams will be winning tournaments and you could imagine Kelso finishing top. 15 points is it's a big cushion at the moment. One weekend, one double weekend can turn that round, but you know the way that the tournaments are formatted slightly undermines the opportunity to steal a march on an opponent club in the duration of the Kings and the Sevens.
It's very interesting though, isn't it? Because the Kelso seem to draw Selkirk all the time, and at the moment they've got the better of Selkirk. So Selkirk slipping to third after the Berwick Sevens tournament, but that could quite easily have been another 10 points plus on top of their title total. So it is going to be interesting, and I think Pool B and Pool C in particular, with Heriots, Jed and Embrakis in Pool C, and Selkirk, Kelso and Watsonians drawn together in Pool B, I think those two are going to be very, very interesting.
Well, I think you can discard Pool C. It's between Heriots and Jed, and you know, Heriots have lost a couple of players to the Super Series. Jed Forrest still pretty strong. Embrakis are in the cup final. So
yeah, but don't forget Embrakis at Hoik.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that, Stuart, because obviously even though Embrakis have a Scottish Cup final this weekend, you know, they almost made it through to the Hoik Sevens final, you know, just missing out by a point to Kelso. So obviously in that pool stage there between you know, a City rival and Jed, that could be and especially the way the fixtures are laying out as well, with Jed going on first, then the Edinburgh Kena Derby, that could be Embrakis against Jed to see who goes through, which would be great. But then obviously the other pool that you've got there, you know, the Pool B that you pick out, Selkirk can beat Kelso. Watsonians, although they went down to Berwick with about 7.5 guys, they were still able to play pretty well in stages. Players like Ross Stanley has been a standout for them. They did have some weaknesses in there, but you know, I think once they get back to the single weekends, they'll be able to contribute and have a stronger starting lineup. So I think it's you know, you look down the pools there and you probably pick out a favourite in each and you can probably predict the semi-finals, but there's not a lot between them in some stages. So obviously, you know, I'd expect Melrose are going to be in the semi-finals, progressing from Pool D. Pool C is difficult to call. You would favour Jed. Pool B, difficult to call. You do wonder if Selkirk get off to a good start and are able to catch Kelso cold, it could be them. But then Watsonians are a good seven side. But then Pool A, you're imagining the way that form's been recently, you know, Gala would probably progress from Pool A. So, you know, certainly those middle pools that you picked out there, Stuart, are definitely the ones to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, Heriots as well, because, I mean, they had one draw and they had a 61-0 win and couldn't make the semi-final.
Yeah, you know, one thing I liked, I was at Golden Acre on Saturday and there wasn't a huge crowd for the Super Series game against Watsonians, but over the headphones I could hear them talking about the ties at Hoik Sevens, which was great because they're trying to keep their club informed of what's going on in the activity, which I think some people forget that, you know, that's what you're when you step through the gates of a club, you're immersed in what's going on in that club and the atmosphere and the guy on the tannoy. You've done a great job of saying, and the Hoyk Sevens, Heriots have won their first game, and you were like, oh wow, it's interesting to see that they're, you know, especially at that level, they're still trying to keep that club and keep it connected. So obviously out with the Super Series stuff and the semi-pro, they've still got a really incredible squad to pick from. You know, a lot of really good players that can certainly do the things on the Sevens field.
Well, in other matters, better news from Walkerburn Club, who last week put out a statement saying they've folded. But this week, they've announced, due to overwhelming support, that they will run their 100th Sevens competition on May the 25th. And there might even be a future for the club. That's a big and very welcome U-turn. We can hear now from former president of Walkerburn, Andrew Toms.
We're delighted to announce that the 2004 Walkerburn Sevens will be held on the 25th of May, a Saturday, 2024. We're delighted that seven of the teams who were invited to the original Sevens have confirmed that they can definitely come. Those teams are Walkerburn, the Walkerburn Old Crocs, Lismore, Gala YM, Thebans, Pennycook and Errolston. We're currently still waiting for five more teams to get back to us. They need to speak to their committees. But we're hopeful that we'll have a full cast of 12 teams ready to play in four groups of three. So on Friday, we had a meeting of everyone who was interested in keeping the Walkerburn Sevens going. And it involved people from the local community as well as the local rugby community. And there were even some old heads from years gone by who came along to give their experience and their thoughts. A Sevens committee has been formed and we are in the process of, almost from a standing start, getting the Walkerburn Sevens up and running for the 25th. It has to be said that the support we've received from Gala YM and Lismore over the season has been phenomenal. But since this announcement was made, the response we've had from the SRU, Edinburgh Rugby, as well as rugby clubs from all over Scotland has just been outstanding. It's very gratifying to know that support is there. Hearing stories of people who've played at Walkerburn over the years, over the decades, has just been great. So it's with a very positive outlook. We're looking forward to getting everything together for the Sevens on the 25th. If you're not doing anything else, please come and join us at the 100th Walkerburn Sevens.
So what do you make of that?
Yeah, it was some U-turn. Yeah, but you know, I just think it shows the power of kind of social media, because they've obviously put out a statement. It's got a bit of traction. It was amazing to see the amount of comments on some platforms that, you know, I'm on, that a lot of people had fond memories of Walkerburn Rugby Club, and obviously they had their, you know, a really successful time decades ago when, you know, they had a lot of industry there, but still it's the social aspect, and the Sevens has always been a good occasion. So hopefully, even though there's, you know, obviously there's some teams there that are playing for just the nostalgia of playing at Walkerburn Sevens, like the Old Crocs, for example, but that's what it's about. It's, you know, it's out with the SRU window, and you want people to be playing rugby and enjoying themselves. So, you know, obviously, teams like Errolston, another opportunity for them to play at a Sevens, and Lismore, and the teams that have supported Walkerburn over the last few years. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you hate to see clubs folding in any way, but you know, there's opportunity for them to hopefully have some good conversations and a bit of a reaction from the community to see if it's something that they want going forward. So, you know, positive news, because this time last week we were sitting talking about another club going to the wall.
Yeah, it's a classic use it or lose it, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I think Walkerburn have been in this situation before. Like, I think they're aware of the shortcomings in terms of numbers that they have to play. But, you know, they've tried from outside looking in to at least provide the community and the people who want to represent that town with some games this season, which is obviously is progress, because ultimately they're out the regional leagues, they're not playing competitive rugby, but who's to say that that level needs to be competitive? It just needs to be a game of rugby and a few beers after, and you know, obviously it's pretty much now, you know, 100th Sevens, which in itself is phenomenal. But it's probably like after the full-time whistle goes on the 25th of May, what's the next steps for Walkerburn Rugby Club? And hopefully those conversations are being had, you know, now, and certainly on the kind of once the appetite is generated and that kind of atmosphere, you get swept away with it, a big event like that. Hopefully, following on from that, they get a bit of momentum and they're able to kind of revise what they do and have some sort of presence in Scottish rugby for years to come.
So much better news from Walkerburn, and let's hope they go on and have a very successful 100th Sevens tournament, and far beyond that as well. We'll certainly keep you up to date on things. But a pretty packed show today. Do join us this Saturday on Rugby Radio. That's packed as well. Another long show and a double bill with coverage of the Langham Sevens from 3 o'clock through till 7. And then we'll be at Murrayfield for the Scottish Cup final between Hoyk and Edinburgh Accies. You can tune in at rugbyradio.co.uk as usual. But for now, from Dale Clancy and myself, bye for now.